Hello, everybody, and welcome to Bookcast episode number 88. Today I'm joined by Stephen, aka Ninja Catfish.
Hello, everybody.
And Flame Condor, aka Daniel.
Hi.
Wait, I got that the wrong way around. That doesn't matter. Yeah. We all know. We've been on the episodes for ages now. So in today's podcast, we'll be quickly going over Donkey Kong news, Smash Bros. News, as well as new announcements and, you know, the typical bad news and digital news. So we'll jump straight into the Donkey Kong update, which is just one piece of news for this fortnight, I guess. So basically, Nintendo, they weren't really hyping it up. I think we were hyping it up more so than them.
As is the way we do it.
That they would have, you know, a presentation at VGX, which is the new kind of new style of VGA. And basically, the big reveal was, which was previously leaked anyway, through, I think, a retailer listing,
Amazon,
was that Cranky Kong is the fourth playable character in Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze. Ooh. I haven't actually seen the video, but from what someone's told me, I think he plays similarly to, Scrooge McDuck from DuckTales.
Yeah, I definitely got that vibe because he's jumping around on his cane, and it looked like he could jump on spikes and not get hurt because his cane jumped or something.
Way forward to be helping out.
Like a somewhat easy mode.
Really weird.
Yeah.
That I feel like, you know, I mean, I know that this is more our fault for getting excited, but I feel like this is kind of, you know, do you remember the first time we were really excited to see what Retro was working on, and then it was another Donkey Kong game, and this time we were really excited to see what Nintendo were going to announce, and then it was a character.
This poor game can't really catch a break. I mean, I'm sure it's going to be an amazing game, but because it's not what everyone wants, everyone's just going, oh, I want a Metroid or something different. And then, oh, it's Donkey Kong. Probably going to be a great Donkey Kong game, but it's like, it's just Donkey Kong.
We said this when it was announced that, you know, we think that it will be great and we'll buy it, but it's just something you can't really get super excited about, I guess.
I think that, did you guys, either of you, watch the VGX?
No.
No.
Because
what
Reggie did, I woke up at 7 a.m. and watched all 3 hours of that train wreck. But it was, I think Reggie kind of put it on himself a little bit, because when he was actually there physically presenting, he was wearing a little Samus pin and he pointed it out. It's like, hey, I like Metroid. Here's Cranky Kong.
What
why do you do
person?
That?
Yeah.
I know.
Look, I mean, I also think the VGX is just the wrong place to show Donkey Kong. Because, I mean, like, it's sort of got this, from what I've seen about it all and all that, it's got this atmosphere. It's, you know, hardcore gamers and all this stuff, and here's a 2D platformer.
I agree with you.
I get that Zelda may not have been right, but, like, because apparently they were ready to show a new Zelda back at Comic-Con, but they just wanted to hold it back a little bit longer. So, I don't know, maybe a new Zelda or something that's actually going to get the hardcore gamers hyped, because that's sort of what they need.
It really seems out of place, and it was a really low-key announcement compared to everything else that was announced at the time. I mean, you've got No Man's Sky, that huge procedurally generated, like, indie space exploration game, and then you've got Titanfall reveals and Witcher 3 and all these giant, amazing games. Yeah, the Tomb Raider Definitive Edition. And here's an easy mode character for Donkey Kong.
Yeah.
Like, one of these things is not like the other.
New trailer for Smash Brothers debuting some new unannounced characters, or just something that'll actually get people excited. Because it's, you know,
something more substantial. Because, like, from what they showed, I can't see myself ever using Cranky Kong. He looks like, you know, the one that you give to the less experienced person, which is kind of a thing Nintendo does, but it's not an exciting thing. It's just a nice little, I guess that makes sense.
So, but I already felt like that's what Dixie was anyway.
So there's four playable characters in this now, isn't there?
Yeah.
So is there going to be four people able to play at the same time? Because they could do that now.
That's a good question.
I don't think it's been confirmed.
Yeah. I would rather this stays.
But I'm pretty sure, is it not true that they hinted that there might be a fifth character or not?
I think people were expecting there to be baby, whatever he is in it.
Oh, just because he's missing, yeah.
Yeah.
But this is the first time Cranky Kong's been playable as well.
But yeah, this I don't know, I think Nintendo sort of thinks a bit more of themselves than that. They think that they really do appeal to these they appeal to Nintendo fans really well, but they don't appeal to the hardcore gamers the way they think they do, and they thought, oh, they like Donkey Kong, this will get them on.
I'm not sure they appeal to the Nintendo fans, though, because I couldn't give a crap about
I'm
Cranky
sure
Kong,
it's going
like,
to be great, but yeah.
I'm sure it is, but I still haven't finished the original Donkey Kong Country Returns.
Yeah,
so...
God, and I've bought it twice.
Well,
yeah,
maybe
I mean,
bad Nintendo fan.
I know what you mean. I feel like they're kind of. I mean, I don't want to say this, but I think, you know, not out of touch, but I think that, as you said, they kind of overestimate their impact now, especially with, you know, how everything's going.
It's sort of similar to where they were in 2002. Like with the GameCube era, and then they're like, oh, here's our E3 press conference, and here's Pac-Man Versus. It sort of feels a bit like that. They think they're a lot more...
I'd like to know whether it's because they seem to think that these announcements are carry way more weight than they actually do, or whether this is literally all they have that they are ready to announce. Like, they don't want to announce, say, a Wii U Zelda when it's just, you know, nothing's been done with it.
But,
so.
I mean, I don't know if this was ever actually confirmed, but did any of you guys remember hearing that there was rumours that they were going to show Zelda at E3, but they pulled it?
Yeah, I've heard that, and then I've heard Comic-Con as well recently.
Yeah, so, for that to come up twice, I think maybe somehow there is some truth to it, but who knows?
I mean, you would think about
all the projects that Nintendo have in the works right now, even like a new trailer for X, I think would have had more impact than something like,
or Bayonetta or
Donkey Kong. Yeah, Bayonetta or X, that's two major games that appeal to the, you know, the people who were watching VGX, because that wasn't even televised this time, it was all online, you know.
I mean, this...
And, like, considering the people that that produce VGX, Spike TV, their demographic's really, really not what Nintendo aims for. Like, they're, I guess, more of the, as you said, Titanfall, Tomb Raider, the kinds of people who... aren't going to be hugely into Nintendo games.
I mean,
more mainstream stuff.
That's what I think the safest thing, as I said a bit before, was would have been a new Smash Brothers trailer, because that is like one of Nintendo's franchises. It's not going to be a franchise that's going to save the Wii U or whatever, but it's one that everyone goes, "Oh my god, that's a really cool trailer. That looks like amazing fun." And just a new one with new characters. Like, I don't know, here's Captain Falcon confirmed for it or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh well. Well, it's happened.
Speaking of
Smash Brothers, not Nintendo, but I suppose Sakurai, the game's producer, posted up another daily screenshot, and this one had Skull Kid in it. But, unfortunately, Skull Kid isn't a new character, he's just an assist trophy. So, I guess we have confirmation that Skull Kid will be in the game, but he will be an assist trophy.
Has it been said what his power's going to be as an assist trophy, or...?
No, as far as I can see, nothing's been said yet. It's just one screenshot, and he said, "Here's the new assist trophy, the Skull Kid." And he said, "I repeat, it's an assist trophy, not a new fighter."
Oh, because someone...
The characters announced on the website are the fighters.
On the NeoGAF thread for it, someone's like, "Smash Brother character confirmed Skull Kid," and just said, "Just an assist trophy," and everyone's freaking out.
Yeah.
I'd say he very much predicted that people would see that screenshot and go, "Oh my god, new character." Yeah. And it's like, no. Just don't even get excited.
Have you noticed Nintendo's been really open about Majora's Mask lately, like with the sort of subtle hints in A Link Between World and then this, and they sort of seem to be...
I know, why are they doing this? It's not...
I reckon that's where the next Wii U Zelda's going to be, maybe.
I wonder if that's what they'll do, like, you know, like A Link Between Worlds, but for Majora, but then...
Terminal.
I don't know.
Or maybe a sequel.
Majora's Mask was one of those games where, you know, so many people disagree on whether or not it's the best one. But
it's a very different Zelda.
I think it's kind of, I mean, I this is, you know, really, what's the word, like a fan's, like a something that, you know, sounds too good to be true, so it probably isn't, but you know, I wonder why they would go to the effort to model Skull Kid and Majora's Mask in HD, because maybe they're working on something else, or, you know, like, people are thinking that, like, I mean, even if they do, like, a 3D, I mean, I don't think they're going to do a 3D remake, it would be way too soon if they did that, but yeah, no, I just really want something to do with Majora's Mask.
I mean, you could go in the same thing they did do Isaac from Golden Sun as an assist trophy in Smash Brothers Brawl, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'll be the giant wet blanket and say this is just Skull Kid in the game. I don't think it means anything.
Yeah,
people
I know.
Just want it to.
We really want it to mean something, but it won't.
And I'm fairly certain his assist power is just going to be summoning the moon. Just because...
Oh, yeah, that'd be cool.
Because the pose...
It looks like he's doing it in the picture too, so... Probably.
Well, maybe he'll just summon disappointment.
Yeah, well, that's...
It'll just be like the VGX.
It'll just be like Snorlax, but like with the moon probably or something. But
it'll have a big scary face.
Yeah, and in HD.
I would love to be able to play a Skull Kid, but I mean, I love assist trophies, and I mean, in the original Smash Brothers game, I would just set it to just Pokeballs because I just like summoning all these little random stuff just to mess with the game. And the same with assist trophies; they're just fun.
But even the thing that I really wish is Nintendo would announce characters like this for Smash Bros. Because right now, all the announcements we're getting are just all old characters, or you know what I mean? Like, it's just...
yeah, you got something out of left field that we didn't predict a year ago.
Yeah, like it feels like it's been so long since I've been like, whoa, with Smash Bros. Like every time we get an announcement, we talk about it on the podcast, and we're like, oh, Olimar, oh, Luigi,
Wicked Trainer,
oh,
Mega Man.
Yeah, like the new characters, they really drum up the excitement. But
I mean, Mega Man, the Wii Fit Trainer, and Villager were really surprising. I mean, hopefully they didn't.
I'm glad they pulled
all
those out like in a trifecta at E3.
Yeah, but I really hope they do more.
Boring. Yeah,
basically.
I mean, sort of like how Rob was announced for the original for Smash Brothers Brawl, sort of out of nowhere, and everyone's like, what?
Majora's Mask and Skull Kid are coming to Smash Bros., which we still don't have a date for yet. Hopefully it's next year, but we'll see. Yeah, so moving on. So Bravely Default came out in Australia and Europe, I guess, this weekend as we record, I guess. Or last weekend, actually. It's been quite a while. We basically got the updated version of Bravely Default, which is called For the Second in Japan, but it's basically what we got as Bravely Default. That makes sense.
Just like an enhanced international version, I guess.
Yeah, pretty much. So, we got that. But the reason that Square Enix put that out is because they're apparently working on Bravely Second, which is going to be the second game, as you could probably guess from the title. Square Enix have even filed the trademark for Bravely Third, so I think they really want to make this work as, you know, a new kind of RPG franchise. And we're gonna be talking about it later in the episode anyway, so I don't want to talk too much about the game itself.
It'd be interesting if this became, I guess, like a Final Fantasy tier, because Final Fantasy's kind of gone downhill in a lot of people's minds. It'd be interesting if this takes its place and becomes the new premier Square Enix RPG. Probably because it's on 3DS, but
the roots for this, I mean, it was developed by the same team that did the Final Fantasy III remake on DS and Final Fantasy IV Heroes of Light. So I think from what I haven't played it, but looking at the series, it seems to harken back to the way that the original Final Fantasies were with the job system and all that, whereas like modern Final Fantasy has sort of gone off in its own completely different direction.
Yeah, but that's true. But in saying that, I think that we'll talk about it later, obviously, but this really does go back to the old stuff, but it still keeps it modern feeling, which I think is what they kind of like. When you play 3, for example, even though the graphics are all new and stuff, it still feels really old.
Yeah.
Whereas with this, I mean, if you guys play it, or if you ever do play it, it feels really modern, and that's why I really hope that, you know, this does take off, because it's really good.
Sort of like how...
And I think it's really interesting that on the same page as Bravely Second, there's a big ad for
Final Fantasy X.
And X-2 HD Remaster, because, like, you know, new, no one wants Lightning. You know, she keeps coming back, but no one wants her.
Well, Nomura wants her.
I mean, Versus 13 might fix that, but we're going off topic. So, I mean, it's cool. I like that, you know, I'm assuming it sold well enough to warrant the sequel. I don't think Square Enix jumped the gun randomly. So, and Bravely Default sequel is coming, which is nice, and Bravely Default 1 is great, but we will tell you about it later. So, stay tuned, I guess.
Please stay tuned.
Moving on to, like, more digital news, I should say, for the eShop and stuff. Sonic Lost World on Wii U is getting patched. I wasn't aware that there were huge issues with it, but apparently there are.
Looking at the things that have been patched, it blows my mind. Like, the first thing it lists is collecting 100 rings will now grant the player an extra life.
I thought that happened in every game all the
ever.
Time.
Every single video game. Like, how is that not a thing?
That's really strange.
I've actually never played a Sonic game before, so I never noticed. I thought, oh, okay, maybe just keep collecting rings.
It's like any video game. It's coins. It's anything. You get 100, you get an extra life. Like, that's just so... What is the point of coins if not for that? Or rings, I guess. But yeah,
just
that's
reading,
the first thing this fixes.
Yeah, just reading it, you know, it seems to make it easier, I assume. Like, you know, if you get game over, which means you're obviously struggling, the game recognizes that and, you know, doubles your lives that you start off with when you continue.
And it gives you a white tanuki suit.
All your power-ups and stuff can now be controlled using the analog stick and buttons. And, you know, there's a graphical issue or something that they fixed, which is nice. I mean, I honestly thought we would never see a day where a Nintendo game, a Nintendo console game, can be patched and fixed. Yeah. But I guess it's happened. On top of that, you can also replay the Nightmare DLC, which was included in that Deadly Six edition, as far as I'm aware, and items now appear on the world map. So it's basically making it more streamlined and easy, which makes me wonder, like, did Nintendo make them do this? Or did they just decide to do it? Or I'm not sure. But
I would hope they decided, because, I mean, that game got a really bad rap.
It doesn't look like a very good game.
It looks good.
Do you guys think that these fixes will fix the game?
No.
From what I can tell, it won't. So
I really, really find it bizarre that in a 3D world you have to hold down a button to run, especially if it's Sonic. Like Mario 3D world, I guess that's harkening back to the old Marios, but you never have to do that with Sonic. His default is run. It's just such a weird design decision.
Well, speaking of patches, Pokemon X and Y have also been patched again, as I think. It's been patched before.
Yeah. It's another one.
Yeah.
So obviously I would assume the other one fixed that horrible game save corrupt.
The Lumia City corruption, yeah.
The patch officially fixes two issues, which is the first is a glitch where Pokemon can't learn new moves after evolving through Wonder Trade. I don't think I ever had that issue, but apparently people did. And the second one was where certain captions for training PR videos did not get unlocked in Lumio City. So nothing major. But crazy people on the internet, like a good crazy though, not a bad crazy, have also found that it also blocks Battle Analyzer and InstaCheck tools. So basically what those tools do is they could kind of let you cheat online, basically, as far as I'm aware. And so you guys were saying that the game now checks against your game history or something with what you're offering up, there's a mismatch.
The battle analyzers, they would, I don't know exactly how they would work, but they'll check the history of whoever you're playing against and somehow make it easier for you to win.
Yeah. Well, I guess it might be able to give you an idea of who the six are in their team rather than having it as a mystery.
Yeah.
I mean, it's good that I think that, you know, Nintendo are really taking X and Y seriously in terms of all the Pokemon games. And, you know, I think these kind of updates and stuff are reflecting that. And they really want to keep it clean. Because I don't know, because I don't spend too much time on the old Pokemon games. But I would assume that was a problem for them back then. Because with, you know, like R4s and stuff, it was just so easy to make a fake Pokemon.
Yeah.
And send it over to another game. And then, you know, I'm sure it was easy to detect them too. But then, you know,
it's hard to detect them at, like, you know, smaller tournaments and stuff where it's not necessarily Nintendo managed.
And then once that stuff starts getting traded online, and then it's like someone gets and it wasn't there, they didn't know, and it's
like a plague.
Yeah.
But it's good that they're stamping it out, I guess, because I hate people who cheat. Moving on to probably the biggest, like, you know, eShop, probably maybe the biggest news of this podcast, I would say. You know, I mean, Nintendo might think Cranky Kong was the biggest news, but it wasn't. So basically, Nintendo put out the 3DS update that I think everyone's been waiting for, kind of, where once you've updated your console, you can link your Nintendo Network ID, including one that you've already made on your Wii U, to your system. On top of that is they've removed the system transfer limit, which is pretty good, I guess, for those people who keep buying those different colours.
Is very good, yeah. I know more than one person who's gone through and bought 3DSs, XLs, 2DSs, and they're like getting to the end of their system transfer limit.
Well, I'm on my third now, as it is, and the day I got it, and then I'm like, oh, you can now transfer more than five times. I'm like, yes! Awesome.
Now you can buy three more 3DSs.
Buy 10 more!
On top of that, we've also... I think this is an amazing feature. It's only because I always used to do it. It was really annoying. To activate the camera, now you just have to press both shoulder buttons and hold them, I think, instead of just pressing one.
Yeah, both L and R have to be held. That is so good.
I can't get over how long it took for them to fix that.
That was the most annoying thing about the 3DS. Like, most of the time when I used it, it was like, oh, here's the camera. So no one ever wants to use that camera. Like, if you use the camera,
please tell us. I didn't mean to press L. I'm sorry. No, don't open up the camera.
Yeah, and then you do that horrible thing where, like, you know, if you're in bed or something and you just see your face pop up quickly, and it's really scary. You're just like,
or you're on a train and a little light goes above the camera and you're like, I hope they don't think I'm taking pictures of him.
Taking 3DS selfies.
But yeah, on top of that, the usual system stability improvements have also been made. And obviously the biggest thing that I left to last on purpose was the Miiverse is now available on the 3DS. Now, I haven't done it. I haven't done my update yet. I don't know why. It's mainly because, and this is going to lead to our next news story, which is about how this update changes eShop and the regional locks and the restrictions and all that kind of stuff. Because, you know, we like to end on bad news all the time.
That's us.
Yep, that's us. So basically, once you link your Nintendo Network ID, you can access the Miiverse, which means, you know, you can post screenshots and stuff, hey, as well, because it's like
I'm pretty sure. Like I tried to do a screenshot of Harvest Moon and New Beginning, but it doesn't seem like there's a community on there for it. So it looks like you can only post screenshots.
That happens
of
to me
games.
When I get that happens to me when I get early copies of Wii U games.
Hmm.
Like the community isn't up yet, or it's not out in Europe.
Because I haven't really used Miiverse a hell of a lot. Is it only games that have a community you can do screenshots of?
Well, the way that you can't just post like a random screenshot to nowhere. You've got to post it to a community, and you can only post like, say, a Smash Bros. Screenshot in a Smash Bros. Community, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
okay.
And like, for example, we get games on a Thursday. Europe gets them on a Friday. If I buy a game on Thursday and for some reason the publisher hasn't put up a community, I can't post anything. So, I mean, if you actually... My last post on Miiverse was me posting in the old Scribblenauts forum asking where the hell the DC Scribblenauts community was, and I got lots of yes for some reason. But, I mean, I assume it's up now, but it wasn't back then. So,
because, you know, especially... Because when I tried to post a Harvest Moon thing, that game had been out for at least a week or so by the time I was trying to do that, if not more, and there still wasn't a community up. I don't know why that is.
Speaking of which, I think some people have said there isn't one for Donkey Kong.
Oh, there is in the screenshot in the news article.
Yeah, no, cause that's what someone said. Like, why is there a Donkey Kong thing in the screenshot but not on the actual Miiverse? So,
huh.
I don't know. It's a bit weird of them to make that. I mean, I the problem is I haven't updated, so I can't check. I really wish I kind of did, but
I can.
I mean, I'm looking at it right now.
And is it there?
But
yours is US. So.
Wouldn't matter. No, I can't see.
I think it does because Wiggy will get lumped in with Europe, so I get a whole bunch of.
You can actually change to view like the Oceanic and Japanese stuff. No, I can't see one.
Yeah, see, so that's really strange that a first party title doesn't have a community. And what I think is even more strange is like, you know, because we're lumped in with Europe, Scribblenauts hasn't come out in Europe yet. Or it might have just come out. Do you know how there was issues?
There is in the US there is a community for Life with Horses 3D.
It's exciting. Yeah. But yeah, so the Miiverse is out. It works the same as far as we can see, but obviously there's a few issues with the community. I don't think Nintendo have created the communities for every single game that they probably should have.
There's only about 19.
I think they said to start with that not all games are going to have communities since it wasn't really a feature implemented from day one, so
yeah.
Hopefully all future releases will get it. We'll see.
And I'm interested to see if they, like, you know, for example, Wind Waker HD used Miiverse quite well, I thought, you know, like the washed up bottles and stuff. I wonder if games will start to have that on 3DS, because it seems to be an OS level implementation, not just like a game by game thing. So
yeah,
hopefully.
It's not like just an app that runs separately to everything else.
Well, I mean, every game that came out on the US eShop on Friday, the other day, that now has a Miiverse section, so I'm guessing everything going forward. Hopefully,
no Donkey Kong, but we have Inazuma 11.3.
I wish I had that.
It's just bizarre, perplexing decisions. But,
like Mario Dream Team, Mario Dream Team does. So
anyway, so with this update, we also have, I guess Nintendo have kind of clamped the region locks down. Like the best words I can come up with, where. The console itself can change regions, but if you do, you lose.
I think you have to format to be able to change regions.
Yeah, and I mean, I've seen so much conflicting information on the internet, and I don't think we've updated our article yet to reflect it, because I've heard some people say you can actually just re-download stuff, but then I've heard you can't, so I'm not sure.
I think Vuk did a whole bunch of experimenting on the day that it came out, but I don't think he was able to. Like, once he had an Australian Nintendo ID linked to that particular console, he couldn't change it, so he didn't really get a chance to go back and, you know, try and download something from another store and wasn't game to format it and lose, like, hundreds of dollars worth of purchases on it.
Mm. I mean, the solution, I guess, to this, if you really don't are worried about it, which, I mean, I'm not worried, I'm just confused, so I'm just waiting until I can work it out myself. Is, you know, you don't have to link your Nintendo Network ID, but obviously if you choose to do that, you can't access the eShop. So
you kind of have to, like, I guess if you're not linking it, then you're still not going to be able to get it on the eShop. You're damned if you do, damned if you don't.
So you do need an ID to get on the eShop.
Yes. That's what I hate about this kind of stuff with Nintendo is, you know, they do good stuff, but then they do it the most ridiculous, annoying, roundabout way, and it just ruins the good stuff. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's...
I'd really like to be a fly on the wall in these meetings where they decide all these things. Like, we're going to do all these great things, but it's going to suck for this reason.
Yeah, like, I don't... I think it's maybe an issue of, you know, them not being very forward-thinking when they designed the 3DS from the outset.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, it must be so... I don't know, but I acknowledge that there must be a lot of challenges in implementing a system like this in a system that's how many years old now?
Almost 3 years old.
Yeah, and, you know, I understand, but it's just annoying, like... And
I think one of the things will be is I was speaking to you might have seen the feature about the development, but they mentioned that the development for 3DS and Wii U, they're completely different. It's not like a PlayStation or iOS where you can develop for one and kind of just easily port it to the other. It's you have to develop the game from the ground up for each platform. So I guess that's going to be another barrier between having games cross-board on multiple platforms. I mean, it's so hard to have them on each of them.
And that's especially what annoys me is, like, you know, the fact that other people are doing it, like, you know, the PlayStation, Xbox, even the Vita, like, all of them are doing it properly, but Nintendo can't even do it
Vita
properly.
I think Vita and PS4 are about the best example. Like,
yeah. Like,
I mean, even the
example.
Vita and PS3. I mean...
Yeah. Oh, good point, yeah. Just the whole PlayStation family. Yeah. You can often buy stuff on one and get it on all three if it's, you know, certain games, but Nintendo, it's weird because they're two Japanese countries and you usually think that they think fairly similarly, but...
See, I mean, it's sort of, you know, it's not really forward steps for them, but it's more of like a sideward step. It's like, we're going to move forward, but we're going to do it in our way, and it's going to be completely different, and you're going to be scratching your head thinking why we didn't do it the same way as everyone else, but then we can still say, but we moved forward.
I mean, I do think Vita is kind of similar to 3DS. I mean, I can't remember, but I mean, I know on the Vita you can only have one account. Is that still the same?
Yeah,
so you can't really switch.
You can, but you have to have different memory cards, but yeah, it's so convoluted that you just don't bother.
Oh, okay.
Everything about, you know, it's with the Vita, if you lose your Vita, you have an account. So, I'll just set the account up on my new Vita and then I can download all my games. You lose your 3DS and you have to go for a long process with Nintendo to get all your purchases moved over. And it's just... It sort of annoys me. I sort of annoys me that I'm a Nintendo fanboy because the Vita, everything's almost done right with it. It just doesn't have all the good games the 3DS has.
It's annoying, and I mean, I feel like, you know, I'm so used to it now that I still get angry about it. I don't know why. Like, I expect different things, but I don't, you know, always end up disappointed. So I know I shouldn't get my hopes up with stuff like this. I guess.
Yeah, it's Nintendo being Nintendo.
Yeah, and just to finish off, Reggie has basically come out and said that, you know, fan petitions and campaigns doesn't actually affect what Nintendo does, and that ultimately it comes down to finance, which I think, okay, there's so much we can talk about for this, really.
God, he's a dick at times.
I heard both of you start, like, breathing in to start talking. I'll start. I think that you can't, I agree that, you know, you can't listen to what fans want all the time, because I feel like, you know, when you listen to what fans want, it kind of reminds me of, you know, that episode of The Simpsons where Homer builds a car and he just keeps adding all these things that all the fans want, but then it just becomes this big, messy mess. Like, I think that's, if you, like, are just completely open to fan stuff, that's what happens, really. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't think fans understand.
That's what happens when you change the ending of a game.
Okay, but I'll argue against that by Nintendo's biggest power right now is their franchise and their core Nintendo fans, and those are the ones who they should be, especially the lapsed Nintendo fans, are the ones they should be trying to appeal to get back on board, because the casual fans that they had with the Wii probably aren't going to ever pick up a Wii U, and a lot of the hardcore gamers who never were Nintendo fans aren't going to pay them attention. And I think by pandering to their existing fan base is their... I mean, it's not a good way to grow your company, but it's a good way to keep your company stable, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, I think he mentions that, you know, 1,000 signatures on a petition doesn't mean 100,000 sales.
And that's true.
But
I agree.
I think... Oh, definitely. Yeah. No doubt there.
This is what annoys me about these fans. I'm going to use quotation marks because I don't think half of them exist. Like... Okay, Xenoblade's a perfect example. Xenoblade is, like, you know, one of the best RPGs released last generation. Like, And I played everyone almost. I think the only one I didn't play was Magna Carta 2, but who played that? No one. You guys probably don't even know what it
is. Yeah,
I'm like, Magna Carta?
Yeah, it's a Korean RPG that came out on Xbox 360.
Wow.
It wasn't that good.
That's
playing.
About as obscure as you can get.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm surprised it came here, but anyway, I digress. So Xenoblade was great. It was better than, I would go as far as to say it was better than Final Fantasy 13. And
okay,
maybe
okay.
13.
Why is that a stretch to say that? I thought that was just given.
Common knowledge.
Yeah.
Well, it is. But you know what really, really, really frustrates me, and I'm gritting my teeth right now because it makes me really angry, is I know so many people who didn't buy it. Like, they just downloaded it or pirated it, and...
Or just didn't bother like me.
And, yeah.
It's the same situation with
because...
the DS. The Wii was so easy to be pirated. Really good games just wouldn't sell at all.
And that's why, you know, I'm partially on Reggie's side here, because... So many people download shit, especially on Wii. That really frustrated me because, you know, that was a console where, you know, in the HD generation, for example, we were really seeing that how, you know, costs and stuff kind of affected genres like this, Xenoblade, where, you know, you're making a 40 to 60 hour game.
Titles really need to have, you know, these sales to justify their existence.
Exactly, because otherwise we're just going to get, you know, linear corridor shooters that are black and white, reuse assets every single level. You know what I mean? Like games like Rise. And I like Rise, but, you know it has problems.
I mean, this is why we sort of need Nintendo to stay strong, because, I mean, we wouldn't get the quirky games like Luigi's Mansion 2 or whatever. We would just be, you know, playing our iOS touch cut the rope shit.
Yeah, no, and I mean, and that's why I understand what he's saying, where, you know, fan petitions don't change, because, you know, fans know what they want, and we know that fans know what they want. But no, actually, that's not even true.
They're also really fickle, like, they'll want something one week, and then it'll come out and go, oh, but it's $90, I'll wait till it's 20.
Yeah, and that's so true, but then I think, you know, fans do know what they want, but they're not realistic when it comes to thinking about, you know, I mean, I'm
what
sure
it
some,
takes for someone
some
to
of the
make
people...
this thing.
I'm sure some of the people here, like, listening to this episode are nodding their heads and maybe agree with me or telling me to shut up. But, like, you know, some people do realize that, you know, it's a business and you're trying to sell to millions of, well, maybe not millions, hundreds
but
of thousands.
But enough to justify the cost of making it.
Exactly. A lot of people don't. And that's what I mean. You've got to have this kind, you've got to understand that, you know, it's a business that people... They need to sell a certain amount.
There's a guy I work with, and he had a 3DS, and he sold, and he was talking about, oh, I'm going to sell it. I'm like, why are you going to sell it? He's like, oh, because I haven't made a flash card for it, so I have to buy my games full price. And I'm like, but why? I mean, he's like, but, you know, it costs so much money. I'm like, the analogy I go for it is like, how much do you pay to go see a movie in the cinema? $20. How long does that last you? Oh, about 2 hours. How long does a decent video game last you? Oh, about 10, 15 hours. So why shouldn't they be worth $60, $70, $80?
I mean, even now they're $60. Nintendo ones are for a 3DS, you know.
I mean, I buy all my games.
Justification of yours, that's exactly what I've used for, like, the last couple of weeks. I've just been like, oh, do I buy it? Eh, it's the cost of a meal. Like, I'll just eat food at home today and buy a video game instead.
Yeah. It's, I mean...
$60 meal.
Well, okay.
Stephen eats
meal
well.
And
Stephen
cinema
eats
ticket.
Damn well.
But
we in Perth don't do things by halves.
I mean, cause,
but that's the other thing as well. Like, if we, the perfect thing to me, where we look at, you know, Nintendo listening to fans and then stuff fucking up, is
explicit
Zelda.
Tag. Yes.
Yes. Explicit tag. Sorry. Okay. So we have Wind Waker, right? Everyone, not everyone hated it,
but the general,
the artistic direction,
the loudest people didn't
was
like
completely
it.
Lampooned. So Nintendo listened to those people, and they made Twilight Princess. And then Twilight Princess was good, but...
So much like Ocarina of Time.
Yeah, like, that people complained about that. So it's like, okay, that's two completely different things that both that fans, quotation mark, hate. So then we go to Skyward Sword, which is, you know, literally a mishmash of Wind Waker's colourful palette kind of colour.
The artistic direction.
Yeah. And, you know, a realistic aesthetic to it, like it this really weird mismatch, which looks, I think, looks good and fine and stuff. And, you know, people were like, you know, it's too much like a ring of time. So then they try and change it up with what they did with Skyward Sword, which was all that backtracking and, you know, and that was just a mess.
Yeah.
And that, to me, those three games, which are really the three latest Zelda games, right? Yeah.
If you don't count handhelds, yeah.
Yeah. Are the perfect example of why I don't think Nintendo should listen to fans completely. And,
I mean, yeah, there's room for feedback, but there's also the fact that these people designing these games probably know what they're doing a lot more than most of us.
And especially, you know, Aonuma, who's literally been working on Zelda games for 20-something years now.
The point I'll argue that, though, is that Miyamoto did make Wii music.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure that that was expected to be much.
Or Steel Diver.
Yeah, Steel Diver was a demo. But anyway, my point is... it's is like, yeah, like, you know, these, as Stephen said, these people do know what they're doing, but they get pressured by fans. And I totally understand, you know, that they do, because they want to please the people who pay their income, essentially. But you have to, you know, you have to have a balance. And that's why I think, you know, that's why Reggie kind of, that's why I agree with him to some extent. But then I do think that they need to kind of catch up with the times for some things, like, you know, online, which we previously discussed.
So yeah, bottom line, if it's going to cost more than they get back when they release it, then they're not going to bother, and fan petitions aren't going to change that.
And buy your games if you want. Yes. If you, like, people say, like, vote with your wallet, and it makes me cringe, but it does apply.
Buy things that you like and that you want to see more of. And...
yeah, exactly. And that's, and as I said, you know, I don't blame these companies. And that's why I get so annoyed when people say, for example, Microsoft are only interested in your money. Every single company who is operating and making games is interested in your money. They're a company that they is literally what they do.
Even
by
Atlas.
Definition.
Even Atlas.
They make products to make a profit. That's how everyone...
We just have nice games as like a side project.
The entire world is driven by money, and if you think otherwise, you're deluded, because it like, you know, some people might be more artistic, but they are in it for the money.
Yeah, us getting nice games is just a means to their end.
Exactly.
And
so,
if you don't buy these games, all you're going to get is iPhone games.
Even the free-to-play trend is happening, you know, but anyway, we've just exhausted that topic. So we'll come back after the short break, and we'll talk about some of the latest games that have come out. Quickly, we'll start off with the two games that, you know, no one has played except for me, pretty much. The first one is Bravely Default, which came out last week as of time of recording. It's basically a old school Japanese RPG that kind of shakes things up a little bit to make it more fast paced and more streamlined, I should say, but not in a bad way. Like, it's not easy.
It sounds like it's modernized, so it's not... you know, it's not stupidly easy, it's not incredibly linear, but it also, you know, doesn't adhere to ancient game design things that are outdated and just never made sense in the first place.
Yeah, it's okay, first of all, it's very, like, it could be a Final Fantasy game. Like, that's the first thing that, you know, it pretty much, they could have put it out as Final Fantasy, you know, Gaiden or Gaiden or whatever, you know, like a side story or something. And
yeah.
It's sort of,
but they didn't.
It sort of evolved from a Final Fantasy game, like Four Heroes of Light on the DS is kind of this game's, sort of the first version of this game, same team worked on them.
The first thing I'll say about it is the presentation is, you know, very good. Like, you know, it's kind of what you'd expect from a mainstream Final Fantasy game, but on DS. Cutscenes are really badly compressed, which is kind of annoying, but I guess, you know, I'll live. When I, like, you know, I've played a good 7 to 10 hours of it, I'd say. And, you know, it's one of those... I've never really felt this way about an RPG since, like, Final Fantasy IX, which to me was the last time that they kind of had this kind of whimsical kind of nature to them. Do you know what I mean? I mean, 10 kind of stepped into that. Like, 10 was good, but that started going into that way too, taking itself way too seriously.
9 was sort of the last traditional Final Fantasy, and then it went really mega sci-fi.
Yeah, and that, I feel like Bravely Default is going back to that, you know, 9 kind of vibe. But, I mean, and just with the music, the environments and stuff, it just feels really nostalgic. But then I'm trying to be really careful not to let my nostalgia cloud my judgment as well. It's really fun. And that's the other thing. I love the way that, you know, it is turn-based, which I think a lot of people hate. I don't know why people hate turn-based, because, you know, for example, Kingdom Hearts, and I know that there are some really, really vocal Kingdom Hearts fans out there, but to me, Kingdom Hearts, it's an action RPG, but, you know, because it's action RPG, there's a lot of, I mean, there's not much depth to it. I mean, you've got, you know, your typical elemental weaknesses and stuff, but really, you're just mashing a button.
Here's the Because I find what like with turn based, you can take your time and analyze and sort of figure out what the best thing to do is. Whereas action, you don't have that. You have to think in the moment.
With because of that, action RPGs are more likely to be shallow because, you know, the player literally cannot think about as much as they could in, say, a strategy game or a turn-based game.
There's got to be very easily signposted. It's weak to this, strong against that, and you've got to, think on the fly.
And so, anyway, we're getting way off topic, but I really like turn-based games. I think that I love action games too, but I really like turn-based games as well because, you know, they're quite well done. But what I love about Bravely Default, and it's so simple, is you can fast-forward the action. Like, you can do, I think it's 1, 2, 4, or 10, I think. I can't remember.
So you, queue up commands?
No. Like, so you can basically, you know, you can put your turns in and stuff, and you don't have to sit through animations every single time. Like, it just fast-forwards through them. Like, you see it, but it's
sort of like within Fire Emblem, how you can skip the battles and stuff.
Yeah, but in Fire Emblem, you can skip them.
Yeah, but you can also speed them up as well, so they don't...
Yeah, so it's the same kind of thing, and I really like that. I mean, I know you just completely blew my thing out of the water where I said Bravely Default only is the game that does it, but where Fire Emblem does too.
It's cool seeing the stuff for the first time, and then when you're seeing it for the 50th time, just hurry up, I want to kill stuff and get to the next boss.
I know, and it makes if you have to grind, which I haven't really yet, it makes it really easy. Do you know what I mean?
Just like comparing that to, as we were talking about, older, I guess, stuck in the past RPGs, when you think of like the PlayStation generation Final Fantasies, the summon animations would be anywhere from like 30 seconds to a minute, and you had to do them multiple times per battle.
You couldn't skip them,
like,
and it's
complete,
you know,
opposite
it's
to this.
So awesome seeing Knights of the Round the first time.
Haven't seen that.
I mean, this is something, something I was worried about when they said that the new Pokemon was going to be 3D, because I had nightmares to the old stadium games because those battles were so long. I just want to hit stuff and go.
So the thing about Bravely Default's battle system is, you know, you can do Brave or Default, which are two things that are apparently in the game before this, the Heroes of Light game, made by the same team. So obviously it's going to carry over. And basically what it lets you do is you can kind of like bank up your moves. So, for example, you can defend yourself and bank up BP, which are battle points or brave points, I can't remember. And the more you've got, the more you can use next turn. So you could basically, you know, if you really wanted to, you could bide your time and then, you know, launch out 10 attacks. But then obviously the problem there is what if you are biding your time and you don't get a chance to attack before the enemy completely defeats you? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you've got to kind of, you know, it's basically risk and reward, like a perfect risk reward system, like distilled down to its like purest thing. Like, you know, do you want to wait and then lay down more damage, but then take the risk that you can be taken out before you even get the chance to? So,
when you're actually issuing the attacks, do you get your choice of who you're attacking, or does it sort of randomize?
No, you get to pick. Okay, so basically what happens is, like, say I could, so for example, I'll mash, you know, the button 5 times to queue up 5 things. And then, you know, it kind of comes up, like, visually it's just 5 cards kind of stack up. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you go, the first card is just like, it's just like a battle menu, but you do it 5 times. So you just input 5 commands, like any game. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's kind of sounding a little bit like, what's the name? Xenosaga? That had a kind of similar-ish... It's probably something that no one's played because it didn't even come out in Australia. No. But yeah, you could sort of save up your moves and then use them all in the next turn to do like an attack that takes 3 points instead of doing 3 smaller attacks. And yeah.
I guess from what you've... I haven't played it, but from what you've just told me, so instead of doing 3 attacks, you do one big one. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly, yeah. You can save up 3 attack points and then use one...
But in Bravely Default, like you wouldn't do one big attack. You would just have 3 turns instead of...
Oh, right.
Do you know what I mean?
Oh, okay. Then, so, yeah, that...
Because the way that it works is you can go... So, basically, your BP is what determines how many things you can do. So, like, let's say you use 4 attacks straight away. That means your BP will go down to -3. So, then you've got to get that back up to 0 before you can attack again. And you get 1 each turn. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, if you use 3, you can deal a lot of damage. But if you don't take out the enemy, you've got to wait for 3 turns before you can attack or heal. So,
I see.
Does that make more sense?
Yeah, so it's sort of you take the risk ahead of time. And, yeah, if you do your 3, you don't take him out, then you've got to hope that you can... Yeah,
or you can reverse that and defend and build your BP up so that you can use it without going into a deficit. So that, or negative,
so it goes
sorry.
Both ways.
Heroes was just you would sort of... just keep guarding till you had enough, and then you'd use them. You wouldn't be able to use them in advance.
It's really good. It's fast-paced. It's the story is okay. The dub is terrible. If I haven't tried to turn it off, but it's just so bad.
Bad voice acting.
I can't get over how awful it is. The game itself is great. I don't know if... I mean, it was made ages ago, technically, wasn't it?
Oh, it came out about a year ago in Japan. Oh,
okay. Because, I mean, I'm not sure if it's just the artistic direction that's, like, what they chose, but the backdrops look very blurry. I don't know if that's because I'm playing on an XL or if that's an artistic choice, but it just doesn't look really that right. But,
yeah, the XL probably doesn't help.
Yeah, but it's really a good game. And, I mean, I think it's really fantastic. And, you know, it's kind of like... I mean, it says it on the back of the box, but it is kind of like a new... way to play, you know, your traditional RPG, and it makes them more interesting. So I guess that's pretty much all I can say about it from what I've played.
I can't wait to get my hands on it. It was just, oh.
But yeah, so it's out now in Australia and Europe, and is coming out in February, I believe,
yes,
in America, for any of you who are importers.
Don't know who they would be.
So moving on to the other game that we didn't actually talk about when it came out, but we've had some time with it. I've had more time than Steven, but... Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag. It's on Wii U. I've played Wii U and Xbox One versions, so it's been really great fun to play the same game twice. Not really. So, I mean, it's like, you know, it's a pirate game, pretty much. It probably didn't even have to be an Assassin's Creed game.
Yeah, I've sort of played only a very little part of it, but it doesn't seem to call back to very much... you know, early Assassin's Creed story. I'm sure it's there. I'm probably just not noticing it.
It's definitely there.
I don't feel like I'm missing out, though, having not played the others.
It's very subtle. Like, it's, you know, all the character names and stuff that are thrown at you in the opening scenes and stuff. Like, I was like, oh, that person. But, like, you know, it's not something that
I mean, I haven't played 100% necessary. I haven't played any barring a little bit of 2. Didn't they, because I have read somewhere, didn't they sort of finish off the storyline they were working with?
The first 3 games, which is really the first 5 games, dealt with Desmond's storyline, and they kind of have moved away from that. But, you know, the story is bigger than Desmond, like, realistically, so they can keep going. And I think for what, you know, they've done well for what they've got to work with. Like, I mean, they probably don't need to keep going, but...
Oh, but they will.
Is that sort of future assassin stuff even interesting, really? I mean, is that why you're playing the game? Or are you just playing it?
Personally, I prefer the modern-day storyline over the normal historical storyline, but I'm in the minority, so don't listen to me. I love that, like, conspiracy kind of, you know, worldwide kind of jet-setting kind of angle that the modern-day story has, but a lot of people do disagree with me. But the game itself, it's... I talked about this in my review, you know, it's basically, you know, it's an open world game. Like, it's a traditional open world game, you know, you can literally, once you get past the first few missions, which probably Steven hasn't done yet, but...
Getting there.
Once you get your ship, like, you know, you can go anywhere, and it's this huge, it's literally, you know, the Caribbean, so you can go to all these, you know, Havana, Nassau, and Kingston, so, you know, it's Jamaica, Cuba, and... Yeah, like, you know, and you've got this free roam, there's no load times, it's just, I mean, I say this in my review, and I think that people probably get angry when I say things like this, but it reminds me a lot of the Wind Waker, because, you know, you've got this full-on, you know, world to explore, it's a big ocean, you've got your own boat, you can go to all these tiny islands to look for secrets and stuff, and the exploration is just really, really well done. The interesting thing is, you know, like, if they did the same thing with land, it would be boring. Like, just
for some reason, like, sailing along has just got such an atmosphere that you're not used to doing in games,
especially when, you know, you get, because you'll get to it eventually, Stephen, but, like, there's parts where you can dive, like, go underwater, explore wrecks.
I've heard that they look incredible.
Hide from sharks, and, you know, like, you know, basically loot stuff, because you're not really an assassin in this game. He's just a guy who has basically stolen an assassin's identity.
First 5 minute spoilers.
Yeah, sorry. And you know, he's really in it for the money, which kind of is a interesting kind of real world parallel to Ubisoft with the Assassin's Creed franchise now.
Yeah,
they probably don't really care about the assassin stuff anymore. It's just about the money. So, But yeah, it's a fantastic game, and you know, it's 15 to 20 hours long. It doesn't really get too boring. The multiplayer is fantastic. It works quite well on Wii U, not as well as it could, but probably better than most third-party offerings. Probably about as smooth as Mass Effect 3, which worked for us quite well when we played it.
Are there any good Wii U features?
No. Okay. the map itself is, you know, manipulatable?
Manipulable?
Yeah, you can zoom in and stuff on the map, and it's very handy if you're doing collectible stuff, but generally speaking, it's nothing major. The Wii U version does look better than the Xbox 360 and PS3 version, but it's very, very marginal.
Would I be able to play it with just the gamepad, with the Pro Controller?
I don't know if you can use the Pro Controller for it or not. Mm. You could easily do that, on an abstract level,
There's nothing touch-based that is absolutely necessary.
Exactly, yeah. Okay. So that's what I was trying to say.
I actually sort of prefer using the Pro Controller at the moment.
Yeah. I mean, could you with 3? I can't remember if you could with 3. I would assume it'd be the same with 4. But, yeah, I mean, it's a really, really fantastic game, and I'm really happy that it's translated really well to the Wii U, because I was a little bit worried that they kind of would put half effort in, because ever since 3 probably didn't sell that well either. Mm. But, yeah, it's fantastic, and I really do recommend it. But, yeah, no one else has played enough of it to talk about it, so we'll move on.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'll stop speaking about Assassin's Creed 4, but, you know, read my review if you guys get a chance, because, I mean, I go over pretty much everything that's worth talking about.
If you haven't played an Assassin's Creed game before, good one to start.
Probably the best place to, if you don't want to jump in from the beginning, probably the best place to start would be 4.
Okay. Just because, the pirates sort of interests me, that, that sounds cool.
Like, even if you're into pirates, just do that, do you know what I mean? Like, because, you know, you meet all these literal, like, real people,
Sparrow?
Blackbeard, not Jack Sparrow, but real people like Blackbeard, Mary Read, and all that kind of stuff. So actual real pirates and stuff. And they're relatively well researched. I mean, obviously, they take some liberties, but they're really... if you like pirates alone, it's worth a buy. So, because there's no other game like it, really.
To stop James from having to talk so much, I also played a video game, and it is called Harvest Moon, A New Beginning. I didn't love it, but I'll tell you a bit more. Essentially, if anyone has somehow never played or come across Harvest Moon, essentially you come across a farm and you take care of the farm, plant things, take care of animals, sell your crops and everything like that, essentially. And I liked it and hated it in the same amount, I guess. It's got a really cool hook to it, like you get up in the morning, you go do your farm chores, you go talk to people in town, go and explore. It's got like extra areas outside of the town as well, which I don't think they did before. But yeah, so you've got the daily hook that you do. It actually, if you like Animal Crossing, it may push the same buttons. I found I had a similar urge to just do one more day or one more chore like I did with Animal Crossing or like a Persona game, if anyone's played those.
Because unlike Animal Crossing, you're not sort of locked into real world time. You can just,
Exactly. You can go to sleep at any point and just wake up the next day. I found some days where I had very little to do at the start of the game. I was like going to sleep at 10 a.m. game time and waking up the next day after 18 hours of sleep. But yeah, it's good. It starts out incredibly, incredibly slow, and that it made it really, really difficult to get into. It sort of painstakingly explains every little thing about the game, and it just took probably about 10 or 12 hours in, and it was still explaining new things to me that kind of just made perfect sense. Mm. And it was not the best.
I haven't played a Harvest Moon game since the Super Nintendo one, which was the first one. So, and it was a bit like that then as well. It just was very slow.
Obviously I haven't played it, but I think with these kinds of games where, you know, you've got a lot of chores to do and a lot of stuff to do, that it has to be really, the UI and stuff has to be really, really streamlined. And that's what really frustrated me about Animal Crossing. Like, you know, the whole throwing stuff out of your pocket to pick
and
something
organizing
up.
It into piles and stuff.
Yeah, like that was just so counterintuitive that it was really annoying. And you know, how you have to run to the top of your map to get to your storage locker, run back. Do you know what I mean? Like, is Harvest Moon kind of? I mean, there's what? There's been like 20-something games now, I think.
Oh,
there's
so heaps. Many.
And spin-offs and stuff.
And so then, yeah, worse in that regard. Spins spun out of that, and it's just, yeah.
So are you saying it's worse than Animal Crossing in terms of streamline?
It really is. Like, you'll find, you know, you'll have your various farming tools. You've got a, you know, an axe, a hoe, a scythe, and switching between them is a matter of, like, pressing a button, bring up a radial menu, and, like, going scrolling between them a whole heap. And it just took so long to do anything, and it was really, really made it difficult to enjoy playing. And it just seemed kind of similar to how we're talking about old Japanese RPGs. It seemed stuck in that 15, 20-year-old mindset of everything has to be hidden behind these menus, and it just really felt old compared to current game interfaces. It was not fun.
And I would, and it's, I loved one of them. I can't remember which one.
Well, there's only been 18 of them, so.
They all have fairly similar, like, if you enjoyed previous Harvest Moon games, then there is a good game in here, but it's just stuck behind so many technical issues and UI issues and stuff that I found it really hard to enjoy and recommend. But once, you know,
I think, yeah, they need to, like, not stop just, it, but, you know, like, make, redo it, like, completely.
Like, modernize it a bit. Yeah. Like it, there is a really, really fun game in there, and there was one particular play session where I just got into a groove of, you know, doing everything in the same order each time, and then another new game mechanic will be added. It's like, oh, cool, another thing to add to my shopping list of things to do. It sounds really boring, but it really got me interested for a little while. So, and then when I sort of saved, went to sleep, came back, I was just, oh, not this again.
I mean, I've actually heard from a lot of people, like, because this is a new beginning you're playing, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I've heard this is actually a lot better than the first 3DS one, Tale of the Two Towns.
I haven't played Tale of the Two Towns. I think from what I've seen, Tale of Two Towns looked a little bit more technically proficient. Mm. Like, this one has frame rate dips all over the place and stuff. But yeah, I'd say they're fairly similar game-wise from what I can gather.
I just wish they'd release the 64 one on Virtual Console. I've heard good shit about that.
But yeah, that's probably about all I have to say about Harvest Moon. There's a good game there, and you just really have to persevere to find it.
Yeah. So I guess, like, you know, if you're a super, super, super Harvest Moon fan, you'll love it. But
you'll find something to like.
It's not going to make any new fans, and especially a modern audience, kind of.
Yeah, absolutely. It's fairly hostile to people that don't want to, you know, that don't know that there's something great under there. I imagine a lot of people just wouldn't bother trying.
It's a game series that has its fans, and they will buy every version that comes out, which is why they keep making out new ones. And I think they know to play to them, so.
Anyway, moving on to I don't want to say the biggest eShop titles, but probably they've had some attention. We've spoken about them quite a few times on the podcast.
The ones I've been excited about most recently.
Yeah. The Sega 3D Classics have finally made their way to the Australian store. I don't know how many there are, and I don't know, did they all go up? Or just
Okay, so far we've had, what's it?
Sonic, Space Harrier.
Yeah, Space Harrier, Outrun.
Outrun, yep. Echo the Dolphin, I think,
Echo
going
the Dolphin,
up very soon, if it's not already.
Echo the Dolphin came out yesterday. Galaxy Force 2 and Altered Beast. That was the one I was forgetting because it's crap.
No, it's the best.
It's really not.
How much are they?
About $6. They are a little bit variable. I think Sonic was about $6.20 and some of them were $6.80. I don't know why. But yeah, all around the $6 to $7 mark, so not
so
bad.
You guys have played a few of them each. Go through each one quickly, I guess, and say what's good, what's bad.
Okay. Well, I mean, the
if
first
they stand up or not.
I mean, I haven't gotten Outrun yet. In hindsight, that's probably the one I should have gotten out of the first batch. But I got Space Harrier because I was like, I've seen footage of Space Harrier before, and I'd never played it, and I thought, that'll be worth a shot with the whole sort of you've played it in the past, haven't you, Stephen? Space Harrier?
Yeah.
How would you describe
it? It's like
it?
One of the games that seems to have been designed for 3D. You're constantly moving into the screen and
scaling,
like,
pixels and
earlier
shit.
Yeah, and even the earlier Master System ones, they did develop it for, like, weird, you know, 3D glasses
There's actually
console.
A NES version of it as well. And that looks,
like, with
really
the,
bad.
The red blue glasses.
Well, no,
just
a NES version of Space Harrier, and it just looks so bad.
But yeah, it seems to be one that a lot of Sega fans hold really dear. I didn't love it, but it's, you know, if you like it, you like it, and it's better. It's the best version of so far.
So is the 3D done well?
Oh yeah, it's, you know, it's done very. I mean, Sega really does what Nintendo don't when it comes to classic games, because
I couldn't agree
even
more.
Their Game Gear games, the quality that they put to the emulation and all the options and features. Like with the Game Gear, you can have different colored Game Gear model screens around it. With the Game Boy, it's just, oh, here's a gray Game Boy.
Oh, it blew my mind looking through all the settings for Sonic specifically. It's got, you know, you can have your 3D can be going, popping out of the screen or falling into the screen.
Yeah.
And it goes as much as you can emulate the sound from a Sega Mega Drive Model 1 or Model 2, because they had very, very slight differences with the sound synthesizers. And they've got an option to switch between the two of them. That just blows my mind that they would even think that that
even just game options, like looking at the Space Harrier ones now, you can have the arcade cabinet noises, or you can have it so, because the original Space Harrier, I think that actually came in a cabinet that would move around, so you can actually,
I think you're right,
move
yeah.
the actual, you can do controls by gyro, you can add extra lives, and it's just all this amazing stuff. And
and in Sonic, you've got the level select open from the outset. So they've done everything they possibly can to, while keeping the game, the actual game itself, intact, they've done as much as they can around it to modernize it and make it accessible for people that either have played it before and just want to go to their favorite level, or even for people who haven't played it, they can play it without, you know, the first Sonic didn't have the spin dash. They've added it in because everyone's used to
it. Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, it's like they've done so much to it, just, you know, while keeping the base game the same, they've done as much as they can to modernize it, and I really like how they've done
that. How good does the 3D look?
So good.
The way everything scales, what's the word I'm looking for?
Well, like how it goes, you know, everything actually goes into and out of the screen. Like, this is one of the Sonic is one of the first 3DS games that I've noticed stuff actually pop out of the screen. Everything else looked like, you know, looking in a window, but yeah, this is one of the first ones where it seemed to actually pop out.
You know, Mario 3D Land, you can actually do that. There's a setting so you can change the 3D to pop out or go back.
Oh, okay. Well, I missed that.
So Space Harrier and Sonic, probably the two, I would say they're the two major ones.
The two most popular ones, I'd say.
I've heard good stuff about OutRun, and everyone sort of, I've seen a lot of people really hype up Galaxy Force 2. I've played a little bit of it, and it's a bit like Space Harrier, and there's just sort of I feel like there's a bit too much going on, and I don't really know if I'm doing anything. It's like, you know, if you play Star Fox, you sort of know that your hits are doing stuff because of the way the enemy ships react. In this, I just don't know if my shots are actually doing anything until something dies. And it's all sort of happening so fast and quick, and I'm like, oh, okay, I got to the end of the level. I don't know how I did that, but I won. Go me.
And what was the other ones you guys have played? Echo, was it?
Yeah, I got Echo
the Dolphin.
I played a little bit of it. I want to play more of Echo because I think I would like it.
On Echo, I haven't actually played the 3D version. Do you know if it has the original Mega Drive soundtrack or the Sega CD soundtrack?
I can exit out of Sonic now and have a look.
Because, I mean, when they released it on Sega CD, they had proper CD audio because that was the end thing at the time. And that was, you know, one of the best parts about the game, and made the actual game itself was a bit of a grind and super difficult. But
because Echo is one of those games, I really like it. I don't know how people feel about it in, like, you know, today, but it just had this kind of, like, ominous, kind of scary kind of feel to it. Like, you know, even though you were in the sea and you had this real feeling of, like, foreignness.
Yeah, it's like, unlike any other video game you've played, like, you haven't, at that point at least, you hadn't played a game where you are a non, you know, not quadruped creature who walks around. You're a dolphin who walks around or swims around eating fish.
Yeah, and you can't talk to people. There's no health bar. Is there a health bar? I don't think there is.
I was always under the impression that it was like an underwater Metroid sort of open world.
Yeah, it is. It's very hard. And,
it is and isn't.
So is Metroid.
Yeah, it's...
And that's the other thing I like about it is, you know, it chucks you into the game. You know, you're a dolphin, you're swimming around, then bam, like something happens. I'm not going to say what happens.
Oh, yeah, that's amazing. Like, you know, I spent at the very start, I won't spoil anything, but you sort of are in this first area, and until you do a certain action, nothing will change. So it gives you as much time as you want to get familiar with the controls and work out how everything works. And then once a certain thing triggers, the whole game's just like, boom.
And I think that's part of the appeal of Echo for me. Is, you know, when I played that as a kid, especially, so I probably got more thing, you know, emotion associated with it. But, you know, that happened. And I was like, what is going on? Like, and, you know,
oh, that happened to me. I played it for the first time on Sega CD this year, and that still just blew my mind that after all that peaceful tranquility, then that happens. It's like, what?
Yeah,
what
is and this then, game? Like, and I mean, I don't know if you guys have gotten to the end yet, but when you kind of find out, like, they don't tell you explicitly what's happened, but you work it out, and it's just, you don't really expect something like that. It's really strange, and, as you say, because it's an animal story, it makes it even weirder. Like, it's very foreign. And, you know, not many games, like, I don't think any games have done something like that since Echo.
I think I might be completely off base with this, but it a little bit reminds me of how, like, the storytelling in Metroid Prime was, none of it was direct. It was all just, you know, you'd
talk to people and
you'd find it. And the animals that you speak to in this game kind of give little tidbits of information, and you can put it all together yourself without
that's the closest thing, I guess, that we've gotten, you know, like scans would be the equivalent of the animals that you speak to or communicate with.
Just looking at Echo now, I mean, it looks amazing. It's sort of similar to Sonic with the parallax 3D effect.
Yeah, and I really want to, I might buy Echo after this podcast, because, you know, like, I imagine it would be great, you know, because you've got those, remembering it better than what it was, but, you know, you've got, like, the coral at the front, you've got bubbles, and, you know, like, animals and stuff, so I'm going to probably buy that one. I've got to update my 3DS, though. So
Sega have done such a good job with taking these games and making them into 3D. Like, the 3D classics that Nintendo did were reasonably good, but I think
they were all games that no one cares about.
Hey, Kirby's Adventure was in
there. Oh, yeah.
That port of Kid Icarus made that game actually playable.
And what about that brawling one?
Urban Champion.
Oh, Street Champion.
Urban Champion. And the sad thing is that's the one they put the most effort into. Because that looked really good.
Why did they do that?
But it's a bad game. And you're like, you tease.
Yeah, the sheer amount of options that Sega really is recognizing, that the people who are buying these old games often are people that, they're not going to be people that have played it for the first time. It's going to be people that have such huge, you know, such great memories, or are they, you know, fully aware of the different things they can do through emulation. Yeah. Like, you can emulate different versions of the Mega Drive, and here you can do it in one that you can pay for, when compared to Nintendo, it's just like, here, this is what you get.
I mean,
you can't really do anything.
They seem to get how to treat their old games properly.
They know what retro gamers want.
So would you guys say they all stand up, besides Altered Beast, apparently?
I think, I personally don't love the first Sonic. I think they've done a fantastic job with improving it and making it as good as it can be, but I just don't like the levels in the first Sonic
I've never played the first Sonic before. I might actually play it now that this
it's port. Worth a shot. Like, if you haven't played it, I'd say it's definitely worthwhile, and for $6, you know, it's no biggie.
And we've also got coming out this week, Streets of Rage and Shinobi 3. So I'm keen to, I mean, I like Streets of Rage 2. I've never played 1, so I'm really interested in that. They've also just announced that Afterburner 2 is coming, that they're doing the next wave of them in Japan, and Afterburner 2 has been announced for that.
That must be doing well to have a second wave, I guess.
So, yeah, I think that if you have memories attached to them, definitely grab them, because they're going to be as good, if not better, than they were at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, if you haven't, then I'd say give it a try.
And, I mean, if there's other Sega games you want done, the best way to make them happen would be to maybe buy these.
With that, we basically talked about most of the major releases in the past few weeks, or at least a month, I guess. So we will go to a break, and then we'll wrap up the episode. We're back. So since the last podcast, we've had quite a few reviews go up, actually. So Lego Marvel 3DS version, which is actually quite different to the Wii U version, so have a read of that if you want. And it's already on sale in most retailers, so I'm assuming it either bombed or they just want to sell it. So, I mean, it's worth a look. Apparently it's not very good. Spoiler alert. On the complete opposite end of the spectrum, Super Mario 3D World, the Wii U version, the Super Mario 3D World review is up. Hook wrote that. Quite long. It's really weird, you know. We always put so much effort into these Zelda and Mario reviews, but, you know, really, these are the games that really sell themselves, but we still put so much effort into them, so.
But hey, everyone wants to know
about it. Yeah, I mean, if you're not sure, read it, but I'm sure most of you have already made your mind. Same with Zelda. Harvest Moon, A New Beginning, did you say, Stephen? Yep.
Yes.
Stephen's review of Harvest
should be going
Moon,
up.
A New Beginning will be up by the time you hear this. Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag for Wii U. We whipped up a review for that because I do really think that, you know, Assassin's Creed got a lot of shit after Assassin's Creed 3. So I think, you know, they really redeem it with Assassin's Creed 4. So I really do think that you owe it to yourself to try it out, even if you didn't like 3, because the game is just so different. Top of that, two of the games that we talked about today in the podcast, the 3D Space Harrier and 3D Sonic the Hedgehog, but reviews for both of those are up. There may be some more in the future for the 3D classics, but I'm not 100% sure. And obviously Bravely Default will be up before the end of the year. On top of that, there's two major articles on the site. The first one is an interview with, who did you interview, Stephen? I can't remember.
It was Image and Form, who are the guys behind SteamWorld Dig and a couple of other games. And I think you just call them No.
When I read it, I'm like, no.
Yeah, those guys. Basically, they made a whole bunch of DSiWare and they're currently making, I think recently Escape Vector, and they've got a few other games in the pipeline. So
for Nintendo. Yeah, they stayed on board after working with WiiWare, so they'd have to be pretty dedicated from what I hear about WiiWare. So
yeah.
But yeah, interesting read on, I guess, how Nintendo works in the indie space, the pluses and the minuses. And, you know, they're pretty honest, which I think is good because, you know, sometimes people aren't. They're scared of, you know.
Yeah, both the devs were really, really good to talk to, very open about everything.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's interesting insight, I guess, to how these people publish their games, because it's very different to how, you know, say, EA publishes a game, if they even bother to publish one on Wii U or 3DS. But on top of that, we have a quick roundup on the Wii U itself as a, you know, a kind of follow-up to our re-review. So, like, you know, a year down the track, how things are going. I think most people contribute to that. We even got Mark Serrells from Kotaku and a few other people from some other sites to contribute, so make sure you go over and read them. And as this episode is the end of the year, we are going to be going on break, so you won't hear from us again until the 15th, and that's when a new episode will be up.
15th of January.
Yeah, the 15th of January, sorry. So the 15th of January, when we will be returning, we're going on basically Christmas and New Year's break. A new episode will be up then, and that will be our kind of, obviously it won't be our end of year wrap, but we will be reflecting on 2013. On that note, if you've got any feedback for us, make sure you leave a review on iTunes especially, but you can also always post on our Facebook page, tweet us if you want, or even join up our forums and, you know, write a message or something. Just let us know what we're doing good or what we're doing bad. Or both. So all the links are available on the website's front page, which is www.books.net. And we will see, we hope you all have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, and we will see you all back on January 15th next year.
Bye.
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 Yes, you're ready.